Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
For some reason, the U.S. military has of late become an experiment, a social experiment. All the bad ideas or half-baked ideas that we think might work in society, we immediately implement in the U.S. military. And one must ask, even as a non-expert in military matters, how does that improve our ability to defend ourselves, both at home and abroad? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about women in the military and the National Defense Authorization Act, a new version of it. Elaine Donnelly joins us. She's founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. She formerly served on the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services and on the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. She's author of a column for The Federalist titled Senate Drops Bipartisan Plan to Draft Women After Constituency Outcry. Elaine, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Remind us, if you would, of how grim things appeared earlier this year regarding the National Defense Authorization Act for 2022.
Well, it actually goes back to January, the inauguration, the new administration coming in, a lot of appointees with social agendas that are harmful to the military. Some of them are being implemented by administrative order, executive order. But then came the defense bill. A lot of people, the liberals in Congress, wanted to codify some very bad ideas, put them into law, one of them being Draft Our Daughters, the legislation to include women in selective service registration. But they also wanted to change the definition of selective service and what its purpose would be so that the Department of Defense could register or call up potentially thousands of young people for reasons other than combat, open-ended. It was a blank check. And this type of language, the House and Senate bills, both of them slightly different, but the House bill somewhat worse than the Senate bill, both of them together would have taken the worst social agenda, woke initiatives, I should say, the far left's favorite ones, put them into law, imposed them on the armed forces, and it would have not only harmed national security, it would have harmed women in the military, civilian women as well. This was a really bad bill, and it looked like it was going to pass because on the Senate side, voting behind closed doors, several Republicans voted the wrong way. Three of them Republican women, including Marsha Blackburn, of all people, voted the wrong way on an amendment for Draft Our Daughters. So that wasn't very helpful. And then on the House side, when they voted in September, a lot of Republicans did vote against it and resisted, but the House bill also passed, and then it was going to go to a conference committee. Well, there was an impasse. Senators Tom Cotton and some others wanted to offer amendments to strike Draft Our Daughters, and the Democrats said, no, you can't do that. So the bill was going nowhere. It was at a total impasse, but it looked like they were going to push hard enough to get the votes to codify all these bad things in this defense bill. Well, everything changed on December the 7th, and it's amazing. There was some hardcore negotiating going on that I think a lot of people in the grassroots who were calling the House and Senate and protesting about this, it had an effect. Because when they came out of their negotiations, the defense bill was cleaned up of all of these offensive, most of them, the offensive things that we were objecting to. Draft Our Daughters, there was critical race theory authorization in there, diversity and inclusion and equity, those kinds of things were in there. They even had what was called the red flag provision having to do with domestic violence, taking someone's guns away. The Second Amendment people were all up in arms about that. All of those things were taken out of that bill. And it was amazing that there's one thing left, and that's part of the bill about sexual assaults and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. A watered-down version of Senator Gillibrand's bill did make it in there. It's going to take these cases out of the jurisdiction of the local chain of command. It's a bad idea. It's going to slow justice. It's not going to be helpful to women who are assaulted in the military. That part was left in. And it can be dealt with later on. But the rest of those bad things were taken out. So this was a real victory for the conservatives.
So go into a little more detail on what that previously planned version of the act would have done to Selective Service.
Well, in particular, it would have said it authorized conscription to, quote, meet diverse mobilization needs and, quote, not solely to provide combat replacements. This is a blank check. This is language that would have authorized conscription for reasons that have never justified conscription before. The Supreme Court has upheld conscription only for one reason, drafting young men in a national emergency to fight in combat units. It's rarely used, hasn't been used in decades, but it has been justified. The Supreme Court upheld it. And the last time Congress passed a law to authorize registration in a draft, they did so with utmost care, and they did it for reasons of national security. In this case, it would have been done for reasons of equity. Big difference. That means 50% men and 50% women would be subject to registration, and if there was a call-up, you call up 50% women, knowing only a tiny percentage of them are qualified, what you have is a mess. You jam up the system. You make it harder to mobilize in a time of national emergency. None of this is necessary. Women have always served in time of national emergency. They've stepped up. They serve in our military today, and they're doing a great job. This was unnecessary, but this language got in this bill, and it was done behind closed doors in the Senate with little thought or debate on the House side, and it was on its way to become law until some serious people took a look at it and they decided to take it out.
You say that the act would have created something called the Council on Military, National, and Public Service. What would that have been?
Yes. Well, that was, you know, it's kind of mysterious where this phrase came from. It reflects recommendations of something called the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service. This was a three-year, $45 million national commission. It was set up by the late John McCain. And what this commission was supposed to do was study Selective Service, come up with options. But what they actually did was come up with recommendations for universal national service, both men and women. This would be the kind of a system where the government, starting with this executive agent for national mobilization, eventually that would morph into what they really recommended, a Council on Military, National, and Public Service. Now, this would be a bureaucracy, cabinet level, very powerful. It would have the power to decide what young people do with their lives for 2 years if it ever became law. Millions of young people. Now, we live in a country where we don't work for the government, okay? There are limited circumstances where the government can order you what to do. But this kind of a grandiose plan for national service is something that they were trying to get it into this bill in an incremental way. It wasn't all at once, just one step and another step, make it gender neutral, set up the bureaucracy, and then go to the next step. I could see very clearly what was going on here. This commission really had this wired, and this was the first step. So the whole bill that they came out with, the so-called Inspired to Serve Act, parts of the House bill came right out of that piece of legislation. So we know that the National Commission and the members of that commission were working with members of Congress, and they were all going in the same direction, and the American people were blissfully unaware of what was going on. Those of us who were watching it closely, though, did leave an awful lot of protesting against it. The first step was draft our daughters on the same basis as men. And we're very fortunate that, at least for now, that threat has been taken away. We're going to have to deal with it and get even more aggressive next year.
You had mentioned a couple other bad ideas that were slated to be introduced into our military. Talk about the introduction of critical race theory.
Well, critical race theory, of course, you know how it goes. They never admit that it's critical race theory. There's a lot of euphemisms that are used. But the language that this bill talked about said that it would take on extremism, it would set up an office of countering extremism, and it would engage and interact with, and this is a quote, solicit recommendations from outside experts on extremism. Now, we know who that is. These are the advocates of critical race theory. This engagement likely would have included these woke consultants and ideologues who have labeled conservatives and CRT critics as extremists who have no place in the military. So that was in the bill. There was also something to expand and codify the Defense Department's diversity, equity, and inclusion training, DIE, some people call it. This is the sort of thing that, and it did mention these categories. We talk about racism, discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, plus conscious and unconscious bias. So this would have been another power base within the Pentagon for academics and ideologues who like to target extremism, always on the right, never on the left. They want to push these race-conscious CRT programs at the military service academies and in all types of military education. The demographic diversity metrics idea, that's what diversity means in the Pentagon. It means diversity metrics or percentage-based quotas. We already have a small army of diversity crats in the Pentagon. We certainly did not need more of those and mandated in law. So it was very important to get that language out of there, too. A next president can come in and hopefully clean house and get rid of some of the ideologues in the Pentagon who keep forcing the social agendas on the armed forces and pushing these demoralizing and divisive critical race theory programs, the ones that people accuse each other of either racism, white supremacy. The whole divisive thing is just, it's just toxic in the military. And yet we know those programs exist. They certainly are at the military service academies. And there was a lot of controversy about that this year. The bills to strike critical race theory did not make it into the bill. But at least Senator Tom Cotton and others who went after the language that would have made it worse, they wanted to double down on it, they got rid of those things and cleaned it out of the defense bill, and that's a good thing.
So what you had mentioned, the reaction of constituencies, what happened on December 7th that essentially put an end to most of these plans?
Well, I'll tell you, there was an awful lot of work that went into this. Organizations like the Family Research Council, Heritage Action, certainly Concerned Women for America, Eagle Forum, the organizations that have the capability to mobilize the grassroots, they started ringing the alarm bells. And I've mentioned only a few of the organizations that were involved, and this went on for weeks. So phone calls were going into Capitol Hill. Information was they were getting no calls or almost no calls on the other side. And that got the attention of people who had voted the wrong way. One of them was Senator Tommy Tuberville from Alabama. He voted the wrong way, but I think all those phone calls made a difference because he seems to have said, well, he's glad that the language isn't in the bill. I suspect that some of the others realized that, maybe we should have thought this through. But again, on the Senate side, they voted on it behind closed doors. There were no open hearings with independent witnesses. They only heard from one side. The members of that national commission that I mentioned earlier, they came in to promote their agenda, but they didn't invite witnesses in to say this agenda is wrong for America and it's wrong for our military. So some senators, they voted the wrong way, and it all hit the fan because people were just furious when they found out what was going on and how on the House side, you know, many of the Republicans went along with it too, but there were fewer on the Republican side because the outcry really did make a difference.
What still concerns you about the bipartisan compromise?
Part of the legislation about the Uniform Code of Military Justice. This is a special legal code that's different in the military from the civilian world. It gives to commanders authority and responsibility for everything that happens within that chain of command. Now, this legislation, although it's not as expansive as the one offered by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, it's a slightly different version, a shorter list of crimes. Some crimes, including the sex crimes and murder and manslaughter, things like that, are going to be handled by distant prosecutors that are not in the chain of command. Now, this is going to slow down the wheels of justice. If somebody has suffered an assault and they look to their chain of command for help, this kind of a case will be, well, it'll have to go to someone hundreds of miles away, a professional prosecutor, and that prosecutor will likely appoint magistrates and others to handle these cases. I think 2 years from now, when this goes into effect, we're going to be hearing complaints about how slow and convoluted and complicated this process is. And it's not going to do anything to mitigate the real threat of sexual assaults in the military. Those numbers keep going up and up and up without any end in sight. This bill, unfortunately, is not going to help that. And it's really unfortunate. It's a genuine problem in the military. But some people here, too, some Republicans went along with this. I was very disappointed in Senator Ted Cruz. He was one of the senators backing Senator Gillibrand's bill. Joni Ernst is another one. Why they feel that this kind of legislation to change the code of military justice, how that will reduce the numbers of sexual assaults, there's a disconnect there. It's not going to do that. But a lot of emotion was brought into play, and Senator Gillibrand got all her votes in a row, and it looked like her legislation was going to pass, but guess what? It wound up on the cutting room floor.
Elaine Donnelly is founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. She formerly served as the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services and on the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. And she's author of a column for The Federalist titled, Senate Drops Bipartisan Plan to Draft Women After Constituent Outcry. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Elaine, thanks.
Thank you. Good to talk with you.
When we return, it's time to go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. The email address is talkback@issuesetc.org and the comment line 618-223-8382. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Many educational institutions are governed by the whims of culture and are increasingly hostile to the Word of God. In contrast, Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, provides classical Lutheran education rooted in God's Word for students preschool through grade 12. Simply put, we equip students to stand firm in the faith through solid education focused on wisdom and virtue. We offer in-person instruction as well as live online classes for remote learning. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 3 through 8, give them the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Symbols of Salvation, The Story of Jesus' Birth. It's a new interactive and illustrated book showcasing the true story of Christmas in rhyme. Symbols of Salvation is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Symbols of Salvation, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at TrinityOrchardFarm.com. That's TrinityOrchardFarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.